Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is Bill Green. He is the founder and principal of Affect, with an A, Advisors. He is obsessed with affecting the potential of people to do great things together. He's a founding actuator of the Culture Fix, a certified system and soul coach, and predictive index partner. He's also a certified facilitator of the six types of working genius, so he knows his stuff. Bill's primary aim is to inspire people to thrive authentically and to find the freedom to do more of what they love. By guiding leaders to convert their company core values into better business bets, Bill helps leaders energize their teams to win without them. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Hey, Kenny, thanks for having me.
Well, Bill, as we start every podcast episode, tell us what is on your mind.
Well, I think it's how powerful it can be these days, especially leading with values. It's such a catchphrase, core values, something comes up all the time. But I was looking at some notes from a recent series of interviews that I did with the client. And one of the quotes I jotted down that really, really resonated with me, and it's kind of topical for our conversation today, is, and I quote, "I don't want to just feel like I know how to perform to belong. I want to feel like I can be exactly who I am and still belong." That's very different. Wow. And that really, really struck me as how important it is for people to feel like what they do every day matters, and that leaders understand that people in their organizations want good stuff too. It's just their job to help them get there.
For sure. So that, I mean, that's a powerful, powerful quote. And one, I think everybody should pause for a minute, hit pause on the podcast. We'll be here when you get back and just chew on that for a hot minute. But hearing a quote like that and some of what you're saying means that there's a different way of thinking, or at least a different experience out there that's being perpetrated. Feels like a strong word because it feels like it's intentional. But what are you seeing in your years of coaching and all the sessions you've run that the current thinking, the prevailing wisdom in leading in such a way that might provoke that sort of quote you just read?
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think historically the idea of mission, vision, values, even goals tends to happen at the leadership team level. Maybe it's a few people in the room who are responsible for guiding the direction of the company. And maybe they even do seek input in some form or another to kind of develop that strategy. But in the end, I think with the prevailing thinking that might create that sort of divide is that when it comes to the blocking and tackling, I like to call it operationalizing culture, it breaks down between what the strategy and the leadership team is doing behind closed doors in a boardroom or maybe at a retreat, and how the people feel when they're actually being expected to execute. So I think the prevailing thinking is that if we tell them what we want, or if I explain the vision, that everyone's just going to get it and follow along. And too often we know that's not the case, because that gap that exists brings quotes like that from people who are out there every day trying to show up and be their best, but maybe falling a little bit short.
Right. That reminds me of a quote a pastor friend of mine would say is, "Told don't mean taught."
Right.
And it just stuck with me. And so what I feel like I hear you saying is most senior leadership teams, they're well-intentioned in setting the values. They let's say they did the actual effort. They didn't just pick honesty and integrity.
Right.
You know? It's like, you better be honest and have some integrity or you have no right to be here. But they pick some great core values. They get all excited. They've been marinating on them for months and they have some sort of announcement, and that's about where they stop. And right. But their expectation is that they've internalized those values the same way they have. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think, you know, as you said a minute ago, maybe the values that the leadership team arrives at are aspirational in nature. Maybe they're even, as Lencioni would say, you know, pay to play. The idea that every organization probably should have integrity as a core value, but what it actually shows up as day to day in your business needs to be something that people can kind of get behind. And I think what I've experienced and where I really like to spend my time is helping to understand what makes a person like the one I quoted at the beginning of our time here today feel the way they do and why the leadership doesn't understand and appreciate that that feeling is prevalent. You know, because when that gap occurs, those values, no matter how good they are or off they may be, don't get really dealt with. They get thrown up on the wall. Maybe there's a really cool poster, or back in the day, you know, the Successories golf course poster and, you know, motivation or something. And there's ways that you sort of merchandise feeling, but until you really reach down deep into the organization and ask people, hey, is this making sense? Can you show me what it looks like when this value is being lived? Do you feel like these are right? Are you the right kind of person for this organization? Are we the right kind of organization for you? Those conversations need to be had. Otherwise, we're just kind of, you know, pretending our way through it and just faking it till we make it.
Right. So two questions come up for me in that is, number one, what have you seen prevent or what's holding back the senior leaders from diving deep in the organization, like you said, to really find out if the values are resonating, are they lived, are they clear, are they understood, so that they the people can internalize them? And I would think, so let's start there. What's keeping those conversations from happening? Because you could say, well, just go talk to your people. But if it was, you know, if it was just that easy, it's like, well, just sell more than your expenses are and you'll have a successful business, right? Like right. That's an oversimplification. So right. What's holding people back?
You know, it's funny. What I found, Kenny, is it is really as simple as you just said. It's a commitment to saying, you know what? I know we're busy. I know our quarter isn't on track. I know we've got some ground to make up, or we're launching a new software system or whatever it may be. The busyness of business doesn't stop because you want to go talk to your people. But I think as simple as it should be, it isn't, because in the end, we're too busy trying to do the things that we do in our business without really intentionally placing the notion of leading with values, engaging with your people, asking them, how are you feeling? How is it going? What does it feel like to work here? Do you feel like when we say we are this, we're actually doing that? And so forth. It's the dialogue. It doesn't have to be instead of the busyness of the business. Mm-hmm. It just has to be integrated into it. And I think, you know, what's really preventing it, as simple as it is, in my experience, in my own observation, is a commitment and a prioritization to make those conversations as important as any discussion about the balance sheet or operational procedure or what have you.
Gotcha. So you see, it's in a lot of leaders' mind, it's not floating on the same plane as those other right. things that have become just baked in. They're disciplined in them. And that discipline doesn't exist there yet. And that takes some measure of intention. I mean, you go through like the levels of learning, right? You know, they may see mm-hmm. the need, but it takes so much energy on top of what they feel is already a jam-packed schedule to just go ask like those great questions that you just laid out.
Right.
So on different ends of the spectrum, what sort of damage is maybe that lack of intention or discipline doing in an organization? Sort of like, you know, at best, you know, we're unclear. At worst, everybody wants to quit or something like that. But
sure.
Where do you see in that spectrum? What kind of damage is this doing? Because I have a feeling that if a leader is listening to this right now and they're going, yeah, you know, that probably is important. Bill, you're right. But really, if I don't do it, what's the harm?
Yeah.
So I guess what's the harm?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, you know, the U.S. Surgeon General actually recently, about a year ago, a little less than a year ago, released a report on the importance of well-being in the workplace. And really, it's reached an epidemic proportion in the U.S. where actually coming out of COVID, there's been so much more light cast on employee wellness and mental health in the workplace because of all the turmoil that we went through with work from home. Am I going to have a job? Should I be working? Can I be working? And as the dust begins to settle, and you know, it's still really settling, you know, I think what this report and the Surgeon General's work has done is said, well, what's happening that we didn't know before COVID that we now know because we've been forced to look under the hood a little bit more? And here's something to think about. This kind of answers your question, at least indirectly. You know, in this work that the U.S. Surgeon General did, they surveyed about 1,500 U.S. adult workers. 76% of the respondents surveyed said they had at least one mental health issue that they were dealing with at work. Maybe it was anxiety, depression, you name it. 84% of the respondents said that their mental health condition was caused by their job.
Wow.
So if you're going to work every day and you're having mental health issues either exacerbated or created by the work you do, and nobody who's leading the organization for whatever reason, in whatever direction, is asking you how you're doing, how you're feeling, how can I help you? Is this the right place for you? Are we doing the right things for you? The problem is a heck of a lot worse than just lack of productivity, efficiency, retention, attrition, turnover. It could end up having costly outcomes in terms of financial expenses, in terms of healthcare and things like that, but also just employee wellness and, God forbid, you know, what might happen when those people come home from work. So we don't even know necessarily how bad it could be, but it shows up in my team doesn't follow the direction. They don't do what they say they're going to do. They're running to the door at 5 o'clock. They can't wait for Friday. They call in sick, blah, blah, blah. So there's ways that we can see it manifest day to day on the surface, but what's below the surface is far more insidious.
Wow. So if you haven't been scared straight yet, hopefully that helps. So, I mean, you're deeply affecting other people, right? Like nothing we do or say as humans doesn't affect the other humans we're around, right?
At
the most basic level. But when you have a power dynamic where, you know, if you're the senior leader, you hold a disproportionate amount of power in a relationship, then even small things you do or don't do have a great impact on the people you lead.
Right.
And maybe what I'm hearing you saying is part of the discipline of just incorporating it as a thing to do, but it's also sounds like it might need to be feeling the weight of responsibility you have as a leader. Is that accurate? Or
yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And I think, you know, as a leader, it's less about making people feel the way we feel and more about understanding how they feel so that we can create a connection that may not exist, that may be fractured, or that may be inconsistent. You know, when the boss is around, when we get feedback during our annual review, when we do something well and we get recognized, there's this feeling of connection. And all the dopamine rush and the way that we feel about doing good work is kind of serves as a temporary fix for us. But how do we create environments as leaders where people feel that connection all the time, including when they're getting constructive feedback, when they're being held accountable, when there's clarity of expectations, they're given the autonomy to do the work they're expected to do, they're being held accountable for results and rewarded when they deliver them and coached when they don't. So it doesn't have to be something that we do especially for some particular problem or on Thursdays or Fridays when we get to wear jeans to work or whatever. It's something that should be just as much a part of your business operations as anything you do at your core. And, you know, Kenny, I think the thing that I'm fascinated by this because of what I love to do, but, you know, the Harvard University study that's been going on for 85 some years on happiness continues to show that the thing that contributes most to people's happiness in life, not just at work, but in life, is a strong sense of connection. And despite all of the other interesting insights that have been gained from this research, if people feel connected, ultimately, they're better. In fact, Gallup recently released some data that I saw the other day, and because I'm a junkie for this stuff, you know, people are nearly four times more likely to be engaged at work when they feel a sense of connection to the culture of the organization. They're more than five times more likely to recommend that company as a great place to work. And they're 55% less likely to be looking for another job while they're at the one they're getting paid to do. So if you create connection as a leader and you come off of your perch or outside of your ivory tower or away from the boardroom and you go talk to your people and say, hey, how you feeling? What's going on? What can I do to make it more enjoyable to come here every day and remove barriers for you, you get better outcomes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's so great to have those studies that you said, but beyond people just anecdotally saying, yeah, I think you should do this is a good idea. And right. Now we have these large scale, you know, peer reviewed, all these things that help validate that. And even in the face of that, some people still will ignore it. It made me think of a study, I forgot who conducted it, but it was the retention rate of people who felt that they had like a work best friend.
Yeah.
And even just one person, right? So it wasn't, I need a connection to my boss and the entire team and the team below me and the team in the next building or the next country or whatever it is. It was literally, if I could have one meaningful connection at work, it was something drastic, well over 50% improvement in retention rate.
Yeah.
Because they had a work BFF.
Yeah.
So as people start to shift, they see the data. There's coaches like you out there that are putting this information out and trying to reach teams and train them up. So how are you helping leaders, and how could leaders say, you know, one who's driving down the road right now?
Yeah.
So take a left. No, I'm just kidding. That would have been really cool. How should they start shifting their thinking, and how should they be thinking about it to where it's not cookie cutter, but it's something they can think about for their life and their leadership?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, simply put, I think there's really three things to think about if you're in that position where you feel like you've got a clear vision, your mission, your values are good in your own mind or the mind of your leadership team. You feel like you've got it right. And you may. And in fact, you probably do. But if you're not sure about the one or 100 or 1,000 people that aren't in the room with you every day, the first thing you can do is ask them. A survey, a simple employee survey can be done. So ultimately, the idea is to get input from everybody in the organization, from the CEO down to the intern, in whatever way is most efficient, most effective, and preferably most honest, you know, to get that to that point where you can bring your culture alive by putting words and behaviors to it that are not ripped from some book or a seminar or some workshop, but rather from your people, everyone in the organization. That's step one. Work to bring your culture alive. The second thing you can do is work together with those people in the organization, not every single one, maybe create a small group or some small subgroups, depending on the nature of your organization, and work to internalize that, market that purpose, make a connection to it. Because Gallup again says 10% increase in a connection to purpose yields an 8% decrease in turnover and almost a 5% increase in profitability. So if there's a day-to-day engagement with those values, with the words and the actions, where you're rewarding it, you're coaching it, you're celebrating it, there's merchandise, t-shirts, hats, whatever it may be, maybe even ping pong tables and beer Fridays, you know, anything we can do to increase that connection and that feeling of joy helps. That helps you make the culture thrive. And the third thing I'd say, very importantly, because we don't do this just for warm, fuzzy, touchy-feely, we need to ultimately connect it to the business. And so if you can look at your HR process after creating those core values that come alive, making them thrive inside of your organization, use them to drive performance by connecting those values and behaviors to your performance process, and look for ways to connect savings, revenue increase, profit margin to changes in the culture, because there's evidence out there from McKinsey and Gallup and many other organizations that show there is a direct relation, a direct correlation rather, to improve culture and increase profitability. So bring your culture alive, work to make it thrive, and use it to drive performance. Those are the three things you can do, totally 100% in your control.
Yeah, I love what you said about it's not taking something off the shelf. It's really using your people. Reminded me of, you know, we have the Clarity Field Guide, right? And
yes.
The subtitle is the answers no one else can give you.
That's right.
Right. And so applying that en masse to your company is no one can come in from the outside and just give you the answers to solve everything. You have the people there. It's the answers no other company could give you. It's inside of your people, which is could be both terrifying and wonderful all at the same time, which is probably a good descriptor for leadership in general.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, Kenny. And I do think that more often than not, the answers are within, one-on-one, as a small group, or as it relates to culture. And I think, you know, when I think about our work with the Culture Fix, I remind people every time when we talk about the Culture Fix, and Will Scott wrote the book, not to mean fix as in repair, like it's broken. It's fix as in a dose, a shot in the arm, some energy, just like your chocolate fix or you need your caffeine fix. We really want to think about the Culture Fix as a way to kind of look for ways whenever it starts to want to drift, a culture fix allows you to kind of keep that boost alive. It's not repairing something that's broken. It's taking what's working and making it better.
Right. Well, and I'm glad you cleared that up. When I think getting a fix, probably not chocolate or caffeine is the first thing that comes to mind, but that's a different thing. You know, maybe too much TV for me. So a couple things came to mind in addressing that is going back to, we're coming out of COVID. There's a lot of back and forth, you know, the topic of work from home and remote work and remote work culture has bubbled up and been a high point for the last 3 years. And now with, you know, for example, right now in the news, Apple is talking, you know, Tim Cook's wanting to bring people back in.
Yeah.
How, or if, or does your recommendation about thinking through this change between having a largely physical presence in office workforce and having one that's far more distributed? How are you seeing those things play out differently, and what considerations do leaders need to make between those two settings?
Yeah, it's a very real challenge for every organization. And a couple things that I would say to your question, Kenny. Number one, the fact that you have this sort of disruption, and it's gone on for a couple of years now, and it probably will for several more, gives you kind of, it creates that vacuum that nature abhors so much, right? So there has never been a better time as a leader to really investigate what you used to think versus what you should be thinking. Because we've been turned upside down, you know, around the world with what's going on. And this work from home, back to the office thing is just one byproduct of it all. So number one, when there's this disruption, it's a great chance to kind of take inventory of the way you've been doing things and ask. Because you might find that what was done in the office can be done as well or better from home, or maybe there's some combination. So that's the one side of it. Use this opportunity as a blessing to say, maybe we should really kind of throw all of the old ideas out and start fresh and see if we can't come up with something better. Now, on the flip side of that, I think the very real thing is what happens to that connection I spoke of earlier? If you don't have a connection where you maybe once did, because you were coming into the office, you were around the water cooler, you were in the lunchroom, and now you're at home or spread out all over the world, maybe, I think we are challenged to look for different and better ways to take some of those things that we could accomplish in a meeting sitting around a table and do it on Zoom. I mean, I can remember back in my days in the corporate world when we would have these WebEx and AT&T Connect and other such tools before Zoom became a thing, and nobody used video. It's unheard of to get on a virtual call now and not have your video on. So there's a perfect example of how we've learned to adapt and make a connection, even if it's only I can see your face, versus before COVID, when if I don't have to be on camera, I'm going to be on audio only, probably on mute, and probably doing something else during the call, unless I'm expected to contribute. So we have to sort of force in some ways things that we may not have had to force before, but being aware of what matters most and why it matters to people is really the answer. People want connection. Let's accept it. It's gone on for 85 years out of Harvard. We know that that matters. Well, then you know what? Let's not refute it, and let's try to create that connection wherever we can, even though I admit it's not always easy. Core values help, though, when you're aligned on the same things that matter, you know, good place to start.
Right. So sounds like it could apply either way, like functionally gathering it or implementing some of those things once you've identified those values may look a little different from a physical. If we have an office, we can put stuff up on the walls. You don't have really, well, not shared walls anyway, sure, in a remote culture. But it may look a little different, but the intention and the approach sound like they would still very much be the same and are still very much driven by a sense of being intentional, is what I feel like I've heard you say through many of these different things, is setting the intention and is taking action on that.
Yes. Well, and again, I mean, I think it's just described as simply as lead with values, make a commitment to lead with values. And that's something, kind of going back to your example of the Clarity Field Guide, that's something every one of us can do. We know what we value individually, when we're in groups, as you seek more input from a larger organization, you can come to the same place around a shared set of values that matter to everyone similarly. and defined behaviors that describe it. Because in the end, as you know from S2, the culture equation is values plus your organizational habits give you the culture that you deserve. Mm-hmm. If you don't like the culture you have, you need to change one of the other variables. It's that simple. So if we decide to lead with values, then everything else you're trying to accomplish falls into place a little bit more easily. It's not always going to be easy, but if you start from a place to say we all agree that this matters most to us and we merchandise it appropriately, even if it's electronically or digitally, we don't need physical walls to do it. But it comes down to a matter of saying, hey, we agreed that this mattered to us. And what it looks like when it goes well is A, B, and C. Where's the gap here? You can have a conversation that's not, I didn't like what you did or said, or I don't like you. It can be, right. We said that we wanted it to be this way, and this is what happened. It doesn't look like that. Can we discuss where the gap is? Now it's taking the threat away and putting it onto what you each said was important in the first place.
Right, the sort of proverbial sliding around to the same side of the table. It's us versus the issue, not us, you know, not me versus you. Right. So I love the little phrase that you said is, you know, we're going to lead with values. Mm-hmm. And that prompted me to think, well, if you're not leading with values, what are the other things people are leading with currently?
That's a great question, Kenny. I'm so glad you asked that. So often what I see, and maybe you do as well with your guests or even in your own practice, is that we're leading with profit. We're leading with growth. We're leading with revenue. We're leading with turnover or capital acquisition or whatever is on our list of important things to us as business owners, which should be there. They are very important, but those are all results and outcomes. Mm-hmm. In most cases, unless you run like a completely robotic organization, which still requires some people, you're going to have to get to those results through people. So we hear things like people first and growth-minded leaders, and those are all really important phrases with which I agree 100%. But to actually behave that way and be intentional about being growth-minded and people first and recognizing what you want from your business comes as a result by what you put into the people you expect to deliver it. That's what leading with values looks like. So if you're not leading with values, I think you're just leading with the outcome that you want instead of recognizing that if you lead with values, that outcome becomes easier to get and probably more sustainable, more joyful, and a lot less stressful. I think that the equation makes a lot more sense in that order than putting anything ahead of leading with values, because then you're just trying to get some result and hoping everybody else aligns.
Right. So, and it's sort of that switch from that outcome focus to the input focus. And that's a big sphere of control. And then some, obviously you and I, we go over scoreboard when we're talking with S2 clients is what are the activities? Yes, you have an outcome you want and we'll, let's state that and let's work backwards from it though. And let's control what we can control, and we can control our activities. I may not control my sales, but I can control how many phone calls I make today, sort of thing. Right?
That's right. That's right. And I think to that example, you know, when we talk about kind of the soul of the organization, what feeds the soul of the organization? The values that the people in it have. And so to use that example, and I love the way you put it, if I make more calls, that doesn't mean I'm going to get more sales. But if I make more calls that are aligned with what we as an organization value and why it matters to us as an organization and what is more likely to happen if we deliver on those values, well, then that conversation with that client or that prospect to whom you are selling probably has a different feel to them. Mm-hmm. And so that soul, and I guess, you know, when I said earlier about being intentional, I think it's another example. When you intentionally nurture the soul of the organization by recognizing virtually anything you put on your strategic plan is going to have a people impact, that's making sure that the soul of your organization is constantly nurtured and reflected in all of your decision-making. It's a lot easier to make those soulful decisions when you lead with values.
I 100% agree. So there's two people, you can call them personas, that have come to mind as you were talking. One is the newer leader, right? Like, you know, we've gotten some of the statistics that, you know, the first time somebody's promoted into a management position or leadership position is what, like early 30s. And the first time they receive training for any of it is like a decade later.
Right. Crazy.
But So you've got that brand new leader. Maybe they just started a company. Maybe they're just leading a division or something like that. And then you've got the senior tenured sort of, you know, old dog can feel like they're being forced to learn a new trick sort of thing. How does that transformation to leading with values look for each of those? And what might those hangups be? I have some, I imagine, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
That's a great question, because I just recently had a conversation with a younger leader, younger in age, younger in being a leader. But, you know, the thing that I thought walking away from that conversation was, I don't care if you're 22 and you've never led a person in your life or a company, or you're 62 and you've done nothing but led people and companies, you can still have values. What you value at 22 might look different than what you value at 62. The people with whom you surround yourself might look different. But the bottom line is, the big difference between the younger, newer leader and the more experienced, sage, wise leader is really just experience and kind of battle scars. But what doesn't change is crafting and committing to what you value, communicating and engaging those with similar values, and making sure that that vision is clear, aligning around them, and being willing as a leader to adjust and adapt as necessary to get to the end. Because I think when you're younger and newer, it's a little harder to recognize when you need to adjust or adapt, but you learn sometimes, and that's when trusting the people around you and mentors and things, coaches can help. But it's no different when you're older. You just have a lot more experience, and it might be a little bit easier to sort of weather some of those gaps and handle the scars of leadership. But if you start with values, young or old, you're going to be in a much better position than if you're trying to catch up to something you don't believe.
Very well said. I love that. So Bill, as the leader, somebody's listening and they're sold on it. They say, this is great. I love this. I'm all in. I want to lead with values. Mm-hmm. But we are not without information in our current age. And they might say, okay, well, what did he say? He was alive and thrive and drive for performance. And I got this. We want to do everything all at once.
Yeah.
There's always a first step, something to build some progress, see some early victories. What's something somebody could, you know, 24 hours after they listen, they could go and take that first step, something that's totally in their control, and start to see some progress?
Right. Well, one of the things that I offer is a free culture checkup. It's a 20 question, takes about 6 minutes. I timed it. I think it's literally 6 minutes. And it gives you an idea of where you stand. So that's one thing that I would offer is take that assessment. It gives you a sense based on your own opinion. Maybe you share it with your senior leadership team of where you stand relative to value. So that's something that you can do in 6 minutes right now. What might come from that is an equally simple assessment that we can send out to your entire organization to get feedback from them on the very same questions you answer in the checkup. So it's kind of one in 1A, but the idea is, let's kind of get an idea of where we stand presently by asking ourselves, our peer senior leaders, and then if you choose to move to the next level, ask everyone in the organization, how are our core values working for us? Do we even have them? Are they right? Where would we change them? So forth and so on. Because then, before you do anything, if you do anything, you at least know what people see and feel in working in your organization, and you can determine what's next. But that's something that you can do right now, as easily as going out to the web and clicking the website.
Yeah. So that self-awareness piece, sort of like, where am I, right? Because if you're going to chart a course to do something different, you need to know where you're starting so that you know what path to take is what I hear you saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Start where you are.
So, exactly. Or you could be like my mother used to always say, wherever you go, there you are. wise words that have stuck with me. So if somebody said, hey, that assessment, I got 6 minutes, I can do this. Where do they go to get that assessment? And what are some other places, maybe if they like what you have to say and they want to learn more about leading with culture and values, where can they connect with you or any of your work?
Yes, I appreciate you asking, Kenny. So to get the assessment, you just simply go to meetbillgreen.com. Can't be much easier than that. I think Bill Green's about the second easiest name behind John Smith. But just M-E-E-T, Bill Green, no E, two in the middle, none at the end. Meetbillgreen.com, and you can get that free assessment that I mentioned. A couple other places I would direct folks to check out. TheCultureFix.works talks a little bit more about the Alive, Thrive, and Drive construct. So just TheCultureFix.works, W-O-R-K-S. And then I'd also recommend individually as leaders that people check out Values in Action. And that's a great website to take an exercise, a little bit longer. I would say it's closer to 15 minutes. There's a free version and you can pay for it. I have nothing to do with it, but it's a great place to start if you don't really know how to put words to your own values. But it's viacharacter.org is a great website to check out. And I highly, highly recommend that. I use that as a tool with my clients who want to get connected better to what they value. Because if you don't know what you value, it can be sometimes hard to lead others through that same exercise. So meetbillgreen.com, theculturefix.works, and viacharacter.org are three places I'd recommend.
Those are fantastic. And we'll have those linked up in the show notes. And then we'll also link to your LinkedIn profile. So if you want to go and follow Bill, he's got some great materials, some great quotes, videos, things like that, that are really resonating with people. So jump in there, take a look, ask him questions. He does check it. It is not a robot. answering, not even, some, you know, virtual assistant. You are going to get the real live Bill Green answering your questions. So take advantage of that, whenever you can. Well, Bill, thank you so much for being on the show and, hope to have you back in the future.
Thank you, Kenny. I really enjoyed it. Take care.
All right. You too.